The Templar Inheritance, John Hart, Book 2, written by Mario Redding and read by Piers Wenner.
I have loved in life, and I have been loved. I have drunk the bowl of poison from the hands of love as nectar. Hazrat Inayat Khan, 1882-1927, from Nirtan, or the Dance of the Soul. Listen, O drop, give yourself up without regret, and in exchange gain the ocean. Rumi, 1207-1273. Chapter 1. As-Sulaymaniyah, Iraq, Wednesday, the 1st of May, 2013. Later, John Hart came to feel that he had anticipated the explosion by a split second, that there had been a momentary vacuum before the blast, during which he had reached towards Nala Nabuna, his guide and translator in Kurdistan, and taken her hand in his. Either way, the makeshift metal screen that separated their private seating area from the main expanse of the tea shop had undoubtedly saved their lives. Hart had awoken on the shard-bedecked tiles, with Narlan curled tightly against him, hip to hip, as if they had dozed off on the floor together, in flagrant disregard for public decency. Hart let Narlan's fingers reluctantly slip from his. He pressed both hands to his ears and swallowed. 10 times. 20. He knew enough about the percussive effects of bombs not to risk getting to his feet before he could hear again. It would be like succumbing to an attack of acute labyrinthitis. For Hart was no stranger to sudden outbreaks of violence. He had undergone his first major bombardment in Sarajevo 20 years before, when he was cutting his milk teeth in photojournalism. The memory of that bombing could still jolt him awake at night, his sheets drenched, his body aching with a form of muscle memory that led his limbs to flex and contract with no discernible input from his conscious mind. It was at that time, too, in Sarajevo, that he had seen what they call the dervish effect at work. People flailing around in the immediate aftermath of a bomb strike, their faces blank, their eyelids ticking, their arms, if they still had any, feeling out for non-existent support. No, Hart decided, he would have none of it. He would lie there on the ground until his hearing and his senses returned. Only then would he act. When next he awoke, Narlan was crouching over him. She was cradling his head in her lap and encircling his face with her arms. He could see her lips moving, but he could not hear what she was saying. A man lurched past them and then turned back in slow motion, as if he had forgotten something. A single red star appeared in the center of his forehead. Hart began to make out Narlan's voice through the fog that was inhabiting his head.
They are firing at us. They are massacring people. We must leave here. I know where to go. It is very near. There are high walls. They will not get in.
Hart tried to get up. He pitched forward onto his knees, as if that single wild movement was what he had always intended to do. Narlan took him by the hands and helped him to his feet. Her touch felt familiar to him now, despite the fact that their physical knowledge of each other had barely progressed beyond the most fleeting of handshakes. He had known Nala Nabuna for a total of 3 days. To all intents and purposes, they were strangers. Until this moment, this freak occurrence, their relationship had been an entirely formal one, businesslike, mutually convenient. He was a 40-year-old freelance photojournalist with all the collateral damage that such a profession entailed, and she was 13 years younger than him and his paid employee. A Chaldean Christian and a Kurd, engaged to be married, as she had swiftly informed him, no doubt in a bid to anticipate and thereby disarm any likely passes. Strictly out of bounds.